The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
End of the day today. We should have an answer as to whether or not Major League Baseball will play in 2020 and for how many games. My question for you is, do you sympathize more with the players or the owners in this dispute? You can answer that question at 888-729-3776 on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News presented by Progressive Insurance. And I'll get to labor or management, owners or players, in just a moment here on the Will Cain Show. But let me hear from a couple of you on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, like Mike in New York. What's up, Mike?
How you doing, Will?
I'm good.
Now, I called you last year. I don't know if you'll actually remember me, but I called last year as Dr. Evil in Jersey City. And at the time, in my Dr. Evil voice, I predicted that Kawhi Leonard would take the Raptors through the Eastern Conference Finals as well as the championship. So I am a worthy voice here on your show. I hope you'll see why. And I wanted to respond to... Yes, okay. So I wanted to respond to a couple of things. First of all, when you were talking to Willie on the phone, this is sort of represents my example. And you guys were going at it back and forth. You said to him off the cuff, you said, Willie, if your wife, because you had given the example of your own wife, and you automatically assumed that Willie had a wife, for example, and maybe he doesn't have a wife, maybe he has a husband, maybe who knows, maybe he's polyamorous, we don't know. But the point is that you made that automatic assumption. It doesn't mean that you're any less aware than anyone else. It's just that it was a knee-jerk thing because you might have come from a certain background or environment or situation that over time, over many years, had.
Okay, hold on for a second here. Hold on for a second here. Let's just, because I appreciate logic and these kind of things. I didn't make any kind of global mistake in by saying, Willie, you know, if you get in a fight with your wife. No, I did not. No, right. Because maybe he's single, maybe he's not. Maybe I should have said girlfriend, maybe I should have said boyfriend. But the truth is, when you walk through life on a daily basis, Dr. Evil, you make assumptions based upon the percentages. The odds were overwhelming that he probably had a wife or a girlfriend, and he could, in me choosing an analogy that he could inject himself into, that was the most likely one. It was not an insult to him if there was another way of life, and it's not any kind of ism for me, or ist, you know, racist or homophobic or whatever.
I never said that.
Okay. But do so. My only point is, like, that's just how human beings work. And it's not ill intentions. It's just like, hey, you know, we're capable of doing the math as we speak.
Okay. I'll give you that. But I want to talk also about the situation with the players in the University of Texas, and you went there yourself. And that whole sort of what can be done and what cannot be done, and if these laudable goals can be accomplished or if they are going to require more time and what's realistic, like you said. And my feeling is this, is first of all, I want to speak to the eyes of Texas. And that core Brett who agreed with you, I agree that it makes me upset, that song, but for different reasons than he does. I'm not being sarcastic. I'm being honest and serious that I identify. I want to give some, you said it was a weak argument, but I want to give some strength to those players' argument. And that is the fact that Texas, one thing we're leaving out is that, you know, all these good intentioned people and all these good people you're talking about, they very well may be very good people. But I do believe that part of being good is being edified, is being informed, is understanding what history teaches us so that we never, the bad parts of history, we hopefully won't have to repeat again if we understand the history. And Texas is rooted in a certain culture. For example, Texas was, before it was a state, Texas was an independent nation for 15 years because they didn't want to be part of the Missouri Compromise in 1820, which would have made Texas a free state, free of slavery. Texas wanted to maintain slavery, and therefore they rebelled and became and declared themselves an independent state in 1821, which they remained until 1836 when Samuel Houston had the war for Texas. Now that state.
Okay, first of all, look, man, you can't talk about edifying people and then not give accurate history. That's wrong. Texas was a part of the nation of Mexico until 1836. Texas rebelled against the nation of Mexico because they felt like Texas or Mexico was not living up to the Mexican 1824 Constitution. The rebellion in the state of Texas, at that time a state of Mexico, was for independent nationhood from Mexico. Had no relationship to the United States at all at that point in time. Okay? Does Texas have, by the way, a history where it was a slave state? Absolutely. But I need you, look, if you're going to talk about edification, and I just went through the history of the song for the Eyes of Texas, then you have to care about it. You can't just care about it in relationship to a point you're trying to make, which I still don't know what it is.
Okay, well, Texas was still a slave state. Okay,
and it was.
Still, even under Mexico, even as part of the nation of Mexico, Texas was still operating with slavery. But my point is that at the time when he made that song, The Eyes of Texas, or he was inspired, or was it 1890-something, in order
1903.
To become the base. Right, okay, so based on what Robert E. Lee had originally said, is that I identify with that because Texas was a slave state, it was part of the Confederacy, and that was rooted in a tradition of slavery as part of the economy. And I think that the history is closer than we feel, and I think that personally, I think it is possible to transform the systemic racism that exists, and I think it is realistic because my feeling is that if Adolf, I'm just going to give an example. I am the grandchild of Holocaust survivors, and this is why it's personal. My great uncle, even, and my uncle, who were born on the same day as I was, were both murdered in the gas chambers in the Holocaust. And my feeling is that if Adolf Hitler, one man, without social media, without TV, without any of those things, and a few of his cronies on the fringe right could take over, fringe at that time was not even right, it was just an extremist party. But if he could take over the government by just one man doing this and creating such an ideology and transforming a nation of 80 million people and ultimately much more of the continent of Europe to adopt his ideology and to, at the time, take the Jewish population from a population of 17 million down to a population of 11 million by murdering 6 million of them. My feeling is that if he could do that in about 10 years' time and dismantle all those things and replace the police that were existing at the time with a new tradition of police, which was the tradition of the SS, and if he could do that, and create that much history, then I think that what we can do is we can do the opposite. I think it's possible. And I think that it's hard because, like you said, you know, people get used to the percentages or they get used to a certain thing, and it doesn't make them a bad person. It's just that what they're used to. And Frederick Douglass said it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. Now, I'm not saying that means
Mike, I'm going to respond to just the massive analogy and statements you've made here. I appreciate the call. First of all, let's deal with your analogy that it comes to World War II. All right. You made the contention that if Hitler could convince everyone to adopt hatred, then we can essentially convince everyone to adopt anti-racism. What I would say to that is Hitler did not convince everyone to adopt his ideology. In fact, a continent full of people died trying to stop it. Not just a continent, but a world full of people died on the battlefields trying to stop the march of some fringe lunatics. The point is, it was fringe lunatics, to your point, that took over. What we're talking about now is whether or not we are winning hearts and minds by doing away with things, and we're going to transform the hearts and minds of people across this country by doing away with things that neither in intention originally nor in intention contemporaneously now have malevolent intentions or malevolent connections. I gave you the history lesson of the University of Texas, and you fell back on the Eyes of Texas specifically. You fell back on the fact that it simply existed, was born at a time when the United States was going through ugly parts of its history. And what I would say to you is this: you do not win good people over by convincing them of things with weak evidence that are evil that are not. And what more, that you will not improve history by erasing history. You will not do that. You're not going to go back to essentially a blank slate and say, let's build it from here. And if you try to do that, you will do away with so much of the greatness in this country. You don't have to. In order to do away with the bad doesn't require us to do away with the good. Without these barometers, without this mast on the sail, we sail anywhere and potentially everywhere. The way to repeat history is to forget it. To ignore it. Really quick. Yeah, really quick. Eric, I don't have a ton of time. We talk often. Eric, I want to hear your point. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that you can't ignore the fact that the song itself was sang at minstrel shows at the University of Texas. I know you can't ignore the past, but to honor it is something to remember. Those are two separate things. You can remember the song, but get rid of it and speak about the history.
Hold on, Eric. Like, I think you should not honor, of course, do not honor the fact that any minstrel shows were performed anywhere, not just the University of Texas, but anywhere. But the fact that this song was performed at a minstrel show doesn't mean, therefore, the song itself becomes one of these emblems of hatred or racism.
But it was performed at minstrel shows at the University of Texas. Like, that's the thing. It has, like, the association between the two of them are not pure. Therefore, like, the fruit from the poisonous tree type thing. And you just can't ignore it and say, we're going to ignore
that. Hey,
Eric,
I know what that means, but my point, you're proving my point. That goes anywhere. Fruit of the poisonous tree goes anywhere and everywhere. You have to take the apple, but you have to look at each apple independently.
Everything has to be taken on a case-by-case basis. And at the end of this, if the players can be convinced otherwise, maybe the players just want to be listened to. Maybe this is something that the players brought up, and it was constantly dismissed because when you look at their complaint, like the response on Twitter is like, well, just leave the university then. There are so many people that the visceral hatred that the players are receiving for trying to respond to that, it doesn't seem like no one wants to discuss it. It seems like a lot of people in Texas are just like dismissing the players' concerns. And I think that proves their point is that their concerns about it are being ignored for the purposes of tradition and not for the origin. No one is recognizing
Eric,
the origin.
That's a very optimistic outlook and one that I would personally put a lot of stock in and hope it's the case. Do you genuinely believe that? Like right now, the way the society and culture is working, do you think there is a sit down and a rational back and forth on whether or not something should be canceled? Or is it more
Because, I mean, the same thing happened at the University of Florida, Florida State or whatever. That coach said one thing, the player said it was another. They had a team's-only meeting, and players would listen to. I think
which one?
What happened is maybe not on Twitter. On Twitter, it might not happen. But at the university itself, it could bring change.
I'm genuinely interested in that example. What are you talking about?
The Florida State, Mike Norvell, I think, is what he's talking about.
You talking about that one with Norvell just a couple of days ago or a week ago?
Roger, yes. Yeah, the Mike Norvell thing. I mean, that blew up on Twitter a lot more. The players handled it. They didn't say anything else about it. And then once it was handled, everyone saw the solution. I think Twitter is not a good reflection on the way that people work through their problems. Let Twitter work through its problems the way Twitter works through its problems, but let people work through it the way people work through it. And I think it could be a discussion, but what happens is players complained, and now everyone is going after these players, calling them entitled and saying, you know, just leave the university, and that's the immediate response. No one should have
but
to
But you're also pointing out the response on Twitter. That's a good point.
No, only because...
Go ahead. Okay, did you take him down?
No, I was just going to say. The only reason is because I was reading the article and they just had a whole bunch of responses in the article itself. Like, the article was basically just Twitter responses. It was my fault for reading it, actually. But I think what we always do is we always say you have to earn these people before they can get on your side. When in actuality, like, wrong things that are offensive to people, things that are seated in hatred, no one should embrace that. But it seems like American history, we're always making that exception to these rules. We have a lot of things in our history that, well, yeah, it was racist, but now. It was racist, but now. It was offensive, but now. We have a lot of that in our history. And if we start looking back in it and actually looking at it objectively, then maybe we need to get rid of some of these things. Like, traditions are themselves can be created at any time, but it seems like we want to hold on to those traditions that are seated in hatred.
In my argument, Eric, to your point of let's make it a case-by-case basis, is just because something existed at the same time as something else ugly was going on, doesn't make it itself that. I appreciate the call. It's good insight. I got to go to a commercial break. But the point is, I agree with you. Let's take it on a case-by-case basis. And many things are rooted, are directly connected to racist traditions. Be gone with them. Goodbye. It was just last week I was saying it's fine, it's good. The NASCAR has banned the Confederate flag from its racetracks. But don't see the thing is it's spilling into every walk of life where it's, hey, that was adjacent to, that was near, that was in the same time period as. And traditions do have value. And if they don't have a good case to make, if they aren't directly connected, if they are only adjacent to a period in time, then you shouldn't be doing away with them. In fact, you water down doing away with everything. And I think you're going to turn off more people than you win over. That it could end up being destructive to a cause rather than helpful. We'll keep this conversation going. Plus, I have a question for you about Major League Baseball, labor versus management. Do we usually pick the owner side or do we pick the player side when it comes to who we blame when a sport like baseball is at an insecure position and coming back? That's coming up on The Will Cain Show.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, how big is the faction of NBA players who aren't interested in coming back in 2020? We'll ask an ESPN NBA insider coming up in just a moment here on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. But it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Today is the day where we will find out whether or not baseball is going to return and for how many games. Owners are holding firm that if players want 100% of their prorated salary, they're going to play about 50 games this season. Players still want more games and more money, but no pay cuts to go along with that. Jeff Passan, ESPN's Major League Baseball insider, was on Get Up laying out what we should see today.
Over the weekend, the Major League Baseball Players Association essentially demanded that MLB get back to them with a schedule by today. Now, per the March 26th agreement, Major League Baseball has the ability to set a schedule. But here's the problem. It only has the ability to set the schedule after discussing and consulting it with the Players Association. There has been no discussion. There has been no consultation. They are not talking. They go back and forth with each other over email. So what we may end up seeing today is Major League Baseball coming back and saying, hey, here are some options that we have. Let's figure something out together.
It's Jeff Passan on Get Up. You know, when I read about these labor negotiations in the middle of this coronavirus pandemic and economic depression, I'm a little surprised. I always am at the way, I don't know, so many articles are characterized. You know, there's been a couple of things. St. Louis Cardinals owner Bill DeWitt, he came out and said, the truth is baseball is not very profitable. I believe that follows in the footsteps of Nuno, remember, another owner just in the last couple of days who said something similar. You don't make that much money at this. And people always point out, what are you talking about? You're a billionaire. How are you not making much money? And we talk about, they talk about the way franchise values go up. You know, what I would say to that is we've heard several different baseball owners now suggest baseball is not that profitable. Now, does the asset value go up? Do they make money if they sell a franchise? Yes, that is true. But I would have to think if you're an owner, you do wonder if that game of musical chairs ever stops. Meaning if it's truly, you have two options here. They're lying, almost in a collusive manner. They're lying about baseball not being that profitable altogether. Or they're telling you it really isn't from a year-to-year profit and loss statement. The asset value may go up. But what I'll tell you is an asset value that continuously goes up even though a business doesn't make much money is an irrational asset. And you ask yourselves, when does the game of musical chairs end? How many times can I trade this asset at a higher value for something that doesn't make much money? I'm assuming the owners aren't lying there for the moment. But if they aren't lying and baseball doesn't make much money, I understand their position in this coronavirus pandemic. They don't want to lose an extra $20 million to play however many extra games. There's a cliche saying nobody likes losing money. Nobody. But especially billionaires. I think it's true. They got to be billionaires for a reason. Nobody likes losing money. So when I look at this, I will grant you, I've started a couple businesses, very small as compared to something like this, but I'm somewhat sympathetic to the idea, yeah, you got to run a business in the black. So when I see labor fights between players and owners, especially in an environment like this, I tend to think, yeah, you got to operate your business without losing a ton of money. But then all the articles I read are so sympathetic to the players, and I do wonder where the fans are. I do wonder, do we, especially now, I mean, it doesn't have to be a global question, but now, in this environment, who do most of you sympathize with? The owners who don't want to lose a lot more money to play extra games, or the players who want to recoup as much salary as possible right now? You can let me know, 888-729-3776. I'm genuinely curious about who we who as fans you largely side with on this. That's Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Hopefully today we'll have an answer of whether or not baseball will return and for how long. That's coming up on the Will Cain Show. Plus, Ramona Shelburne is going to tell us how big is the contingent of NBA players who aren't that interested in returning this year. It's coming up on the Will Cain Show.
This is the Will Cain Show.
He's got great hair.
Amazing hair. And seems to be immune to whatever contaminants are making Max Kellerman gray.
I think that's because whenever Will shakes your hand, he sucks the life force out of you.
Don't worry. More coming up.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
So how many players are in this faction? Is it now led by Kyrie Irving? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, brought to you by Barbasol Shaving Cream, an American original for over 100 years. Close shave, America. Close shave, Barbasol. To help answer those questions on the phone lines is ESPN NBA reporter Ramona Shelburne. Hello, Ramona.
What's going on, Will?
Not much. So tell me about this Friday call and Kyrie emerging as the leader and how big the faction is of players that aren't that interested in returning to play right now.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to one player on this call, and I think sometimes it's important for us in the media to check ourselves sometimes because we have an impression based off of narratives that we write and stories that we write and interviews we do with players. Like, you have an impression of a guy, right? Like, you feel like you have some idea of what Kyrie Irving is like, right? But I think players have a different view of him, and I'm not saying they think of him vastly differently than you and I do, but one of the things that, you know, we kind of, it's sort of become a humorous thing now with the Earth is Flat, you know, line that Kyrie Irving put out there. The player has actually, he's an all-star. I mean, he's a really good player who also had some misgivings about the NBA's return to play and how this is going to go, but also process-based questions of just how this, you know, all these, you know, it would seem like a small group of people negotiated a lot of this, and then the larger group of NBA players, you know, was just told and informed, like, here's where we're at, how do you guys feel? You know, this player says, look, you know, part of the reason I went to Kyrie with my concerns is because he says the Earth's flat, right? You know, you could look at an apple over there, and he'd be like, are you sure that's an apple? That might be an orange, right? Like, and I think, he goes, that's why I felt comfortable talking to him, saying, hey, are we sure this is a good idea? Are we sure we're all on the right page here? Because, you know, the player I talked to, he was less concerned about the social justice movement and how the NBA would distract from it. Well, he knew a lot of players were concerned about that. His concerns were just flat out, I don't know if this bubble is going to work. I don't know that NBA players are really going to be okay with 6 or 7 weeks in a bubble and no contact with the outside world. Like, how's that going to feel? Just socially, emotionally, mentally, physically, you know, that's going to be really hard. And I think the reality of that, you know, is dawning on players and what that's going to feel like. The player I spoke to said, hey, you know, I'll be okay. I'll just play a lot of video games, I guess, or call my family or whatever. But it's going to be really hard for that amount of players to be sequestered and in that campus-like environment. And so, you know, he just wanted to talk it through. And so I think a lot of that call on Friday was players who, more rank and file players who didn't feel as much a part of the process in negotiating the deal that's been negotiated. Like, they've kept abreast of it. They know what's there. They're tentatively okay with it, but they just wanted a forum to talk about things. And I know a lot of players felt very passionately about whether or not the NBA's return was going to distract from the Black Lives Matter movement that we've seen in the last 2 or 3 weeks since George Floyd's killing, that they were very concerned about that. So I think there's probably two, three, four issues that players had that they just wanted an open forum. And, you know, I think players feel heard now. I don't think this is going to derail the plans to resume the season. I think we're going to keep moving forward. And I think training camp opens next week. I just think it's important for everybody to keep talking about this stuff because, you know, look, well, I'm not going to the bubble. Are you? Like, could you really do 7 weeks in isolation without seeing your family? You know, that's tough. And it's important for everybody to feel heard.
Yeah, I hear you. I have a couple responses to that. First of all, I think there's a difference between being a free thinker and a thinker who is free from reason. And I think if you are looking to Kyrie to be your, hey, let's just have an exploratory conversation. Okay, that's fine. You know, you want to have like a dorm room debate. He's probably a great person to hang out with. Being a leader requires a little bit more linear thinking, I would think. And and that's why I was curious if Kyrie had emerged as a leader, which, by the way, is also a peculiar thing for Kyrie, a situation for him to be in, because Kyrie's not going to play this year. So it's like you might look to a player who has a vested interest in this season. And that leads us to LeBron, right? And everybody's talking about what is LeBron's position. Does he want to come back? This is a total guess. My guess would be LeBron definitely wants to come back and play this year.
Oh, yeah.
And so will we hear from guys like LeBron now step up and say, let's do this, guys?
Well, one thing, I checked in with a couple people who were close to LeBron over the weekend because Patrick Beverley kind of called him out, right? I mean, I don't know how you took that tweet, but I took it as calling him out. You know, hey, tell me what you really, you know, I'm telling the world what you think, but I would rather hear from you. And it's a really interesting position for LeBron James because I think his position is pretty clear. And the folks I talk to speak to LeBron regularly, you know how he feels. Like, you know, he doesn't want to tell the other players this is what you should do. He doesn't want to say, hey, you know, he recognizes what you just said, Will, that he has a vested interest, that his viewpoint on the season is obviously going to be colored by the fact that the Lakers have a chance to win a championship, and he's the leader of that team. He believes that he can promote the cause that he cares about. Right? He started the More Than a Vote this last week and got 80 players and musicians and celebrities on a Zoom call to help work against voter suppression, but also voter registration as we head to the election this fall. Like, he has historically been able to use his platform and megaphone pretty loudly on social issues at moments when all eyes are on him. I mean, I'll go back to Trayvon Martin when the Heat wore the hoodies and they took that photo. That was right in 2012 in the peak of the Miami Heat dynasty there. I don't know if we call it dynasty, but of their run. 2014, he's the first player in front of a microphone that says there's no place for Donald Sterling in this league. So I think
a week or two ago on Drew Brees, he was tweeting.
That's right. That's right. And so for LeBron, it's never been an issue to whether or not basketball is a distraction. If anything, basketball enhances his message. But he also has a pretty large platform. And I think it's tricky because he doesn't want to tell other players who feel equally strongly about the, you know, that this could be a distraction and it could take away from the movement and you know, what everybody's protesting out in the streets right now. He doesn't want to take away from that, and he doesn't want to invalidate those feelings. He just knows, you know, because if he says we should all play, how's that going to make Lou Williams feel? How's that going to make Dwight Howard, his teammate, feel? If he feels really strong the other way, he doesn't want to bully anybody into that by using his stature. So it's a difficult position for him publicly. I don't blame him for not commenting. I think eventually he's going to have to. But I think it kind of speaks for itself.
But you sound optimistic. Ramona Shelburne here on the Will Cain Show, too. After all this, it doesn't sound like there's a Kyrie insurrection in what I'm hearing from you. It's like we're still headed towards finishing.
And here's the thing. And, Will, this is the biggest biggest point that I heard from a lot of players. Like the player I talked to was sort of frustrated at the end of that call because he felt like there was a lot of talk and a lot of venting. And which was good. Everybody felt heard, but there weren't like a lot of plans for action. There was no set agenda of like, okay, how many of you guys don't want to play and here's what we're going to do about it. There was no real call to action. There was maybe something was left off as let's keep talking. And I think conversations have taken place all weekend long. I spoke to Michelle Roberts. She's the head of the players union. She said, you know, she knows dozens of calls that have happened all weekend long between groups of players, whether it's 5 players here, 10 players there, you know, 15, whatever it is. Like, players have been talking all weekend long, and they're going to continue to talk into this week about ways that the NBA can use its platform to magnify the message and the movement rather than distract from it. And I think you're going to see some interesting ideas. Like, you know, one player mentioned, hey, why don't we put a patch on our jersey that says George Floyd? Why don't we, you know, what if there's a something that everybody can do, collectively do before a game, whether it's kneeling or a fist up or whatever it is. These are the kind of things that people are talking about right now. There could be financial commitments that players make or that teams make. I think all that's on the table, and you have this moment where if you do it with a plan, right? And that really is a lot of the, there's a lot of function to protest. We can speak, just analytically about what the function of protest is. First is to call attention to a problem and force people to stop and think. But then you want to see some action. You want to see change. And I think we're at that moment where NBA players are like, well, how can we call attention to the problem but also try to force some change?
And that's the conversation, Ramona, for what it's worth, that's the conversation we've started the show with today. I'm not trying to, like, pat myself on the back. I'm not trying to – since 2016, I've been asking that same question. There has to be an identifiable end game, a goal, in order to accomplish something. And I really think we're not very close to that answer, I think. And because of that, we do spin off in a lot of different directions. And, we fight over flags, we fight over mascots, we fight over songs, whatever it may be. And unless you can answer that question, not only will we have these petty fights, we'll never actually get to progress. It's the only way you get there is with an identifiable. You don't run a race unless you know what the finish line is, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's what that call felt like. It was, at least the player that I spoke to, he's an all-star player. And he said, look, I think it's a really important, and one of the guys, and I'm gonna tip my hand and where some of my reporting is going right now and the conversations I'm having is, I covered the in 2014 when the Donald Sterling making all his racist remarks to his mistress aunt came out, right? And a lot of the players then thought about, well, we should boycott. There was a lot of pressure on the Clipper players to boycott, not play that game up in Golden State. And the players were like, well, we've never played for Donald Sterling. Like, he's never a part of our motivation or anything. Like, what's boycotting going to do? And we feel like Adam Silver's going to swing the hammer. We feel like there's going to be punishment. And if he doesn't, then maybe we'll talk about boycott. But we needed a couple of days for him to investigate and to deliver the punishment. That's exactly what happened. And I'm curious. And Matt Barnes was one of the players on that team. And he's got a loud voice right now. He said, if he were to go back again, he's always thought about if they did the right thing. Should they have boycotted? Should they have protested? It would have been an amazing symbol and moment. But I don't know if they had an end game to it. Like, what was their end game? And it was just to force Adam Silver to do what he ended up doing 2 days later. And I think that's the same kind of conversation we're having right now. Is what is the end game? What is the purpose of it? And I think those are the right conversations to have.
I agree. I totally agree.
Otherwise, as you say, we end up doing a lot of venting, but not much action.
All right. ESPN NBA reporter Ramona Shelburne here on The Will Cain Show. Thank you, Ramona, very much.
Yeah, thanks, Will.
All right. I'll take your calls next on, I asked you, baseball. Players or owners? Who are you more sympathetic to? It's coming up on The Will Cain Show.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
I admit I'm somewhat biased or sympathetic to owners' plight because I'm understanding, I believe, economic realities. Nobody likes to lose money. But I see so many that seem to be sympathetic with the players. The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. So I asked you, who are you more sympathetic to, owners or players? Nuno put a poll up on our Will Cain Show Twitter feed. He's going to give us the results on that in just a moment. But let me hear from you guys. Calvin in Texas. What's up, Calvin?
How you doing, man?
Hey.
I like to say, simply put, I sympathize with the players for this reason. In my opinion, they assume more of the risk. With everything that's going on in the world, I do understand nobody likes to lose money, and that's a universal thing. But the players have more at risk health-wise than the owners. The owners can sit at home and make money. The players are the ones that have to travel. In regards to the basketball, they're under a bubble. You take a road trip, that's 2 weeks. You're asking them to be away from their families and everything for basically anywhere from 1.5 to 2.5 months. Those are drastic differences that I don't think anybody
But Calvin, doesn't it? I hear you. There's definitely more health risks that the players are taking. But don't you feel like it kind of undercuts it? That's not their concern in baseball's sake if what they're asking for is more exposure, more games, not fewer.
Yes. On one hand, yes. But isn't the issue the money based mm-hmm. on if you're asking me to play a certain amount of games for a percentage of my money, and where I'm saying I want more games, maybe I don't fully understand the details of that part of it. But in general, I believe the players are taking more of a risk than the owners.
Okay. All right, I appreciate the call, Calvin. Troy in Ohio, you're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Hey.
Hey, I just think society has forgotten the term owner and what it really means. I mean, not this is off topic a little bit, but the football players, you know, saying, oh, they need to hire Colin Kaepernick, you know, that will set, you know, that straight. And it's just like, how can you make somebody do something they don't want to do? Or Stephen A. saying that there should be more diversity in the owners. Well, what are they going to do, make a owner sell his team? I just don't understand.
Well, okay. So, thanks for the call, Troy. I don't know what that has to do with what I asked at all. That's number one. Number two, though, it did jar a thought in my head. Remember when we fought over the word owner in the NFL? Do you remember that when it was like the biggest controversy in sports? Like, why should we keep using the word owner? You don't own players. Of course, that's ridiculous. You own the team. Nobody said you own a player.
It was the NBA, not the NFL.
Was it the NBA, yeah, not the NFL?
They changed it to governors, right?
It was Draymond.
Oh, they did.
Green,
that's right.
Yeah.
My point is, that is a perfect illustration of what we're talking about. If you don't identify the end game, if you don't identify goals on progress in society, you end up with that BS. We're gonna change, we're not gonna call people that own a team owners anymore. And that's exactly what we're doing to the nth degree. The eyes of Texas, you know, and it's gonna go in a million different directions. Who knows where it's gonna go, because you don't identify a real progressive end game. Instead, it'll come down to nonsense like that. And think in the end you're gonna chop that up as progress and success? Please.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.